I'd like to invite you to open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 18 this morning. We're going to look at a few verses out of the chapter, not the entire chapter. If you're looking at it and seeing how many verses that are there and saying, well, if we're going to look at the whole thing, we're going to be here for a while, let's pack a lunch and hang around, or let's get out now, one of those two. Anyway, we're not going to look at the whole thing, but just a few verses out of another significant chapter in the life of Abraham, the patriarch, who we value, in fact, we owe much to, including our Lord Jesus Christ, who is a descendant of Abraham. For me, one of the most intriguing verses of the Bible is found in the book of Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2, that says, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it." You ever had a sense that you've entertained an angel at some point in your life? Yes? How many of us have had an experience like that where we sensed that we may have entertained an angel? Some of you are like, yes, I know I did. Others of you are not so sure. But I think that's a very distinct possibility based on that verse, that as we would help out those who are strangers, that in some cases we've literally entertained angels unaware. I remember one particular incident, I'm just going to share this with you. Back in 72, 73, thereabouts, when I was in high school, and I had a part-time job after school working in a service station. Let me clarify, this also dates me a little bit, but service stations are where people actually pump gas. You know, some remember that. Nowadays, you know, you pay a lot more to get that if you can find it at all. But back then, that was common practice. A car pulled up and you actually pumped gas. You know, an amazing thing. Anyway, a full service station. And I remember very well one rainy night, and it was about time to close up. I had turned out the outside lights. The gas pumps were still lit up, and a car pulled up. And a rainy, kind of cold night, and I'm sitting there thinking, boy, maybe I could just ignore this customer, and they'll go away. And I did not want to go out at all. But anyway, I just felt prompted to go ahead and go out there. So I went out. And I put gas in the car for the customer that pulled up. But I just had this distinct impression something was very different about the driver of that car. And I can't really put it into words, but the driver had kind of a knowing look and way about him. And I just recalled, and I didn't know this verse that well at that time, but as that car pulled away, I just had a distinct impression I'd been in the presence of one of God's angels. I'm glad I went out and pumped the gas, by the way, instead of just saying, by the way, it's closing time, forget it. And anyway, I was gracious enough to do that, even though I initially didn't want to. But I suspected that I had encountered an angel in that incident. I often think about angels coming as homeless and needy people. And this is one that's maybe more difficult. And I've encountered plenty of such people over the years, plenty of those kinds of people in my time as your pastor, and I don't always feel good about how I've handled those situations. But I think it makes perfect sense that God will send His angels as someone needy. And in many cases, those are tests to see how we will deal with them. And on the day of judgment, not to put the fear of God in us over this, but how we deal with those situations is a factor, apparently, on the day of judgment. I'm reminded of Jesus' words in Matthew chapter 24, and He states positively, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." And then the righteous will answer Him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you?" And the king will answer and say to them, "Truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to the least of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me." That's the positive side. He also states the negative, when we did not do it to those. And I often think of those words and think that in very a real sense that the angels of God may have visited us as those who have needs, and how we respond is very, very important in the whole scheme of things. Having said those things, Abraham, the great patriarch, man of faith of the Old Testament, was a model of how to entertain angels. And so if you are looking in Genesis chapter 18, we'll take a look at how he dealt with some angels that came to visit him. So let's take a look in the first 8 verses, and it says, "Now the Lord appeared to him by the oaks of Mamre, while he was sitting at the tent door in the heat of the day. When he lifted up his eyes and looked, behold, 3 men were standing opposite him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the earth and said, 'My Lord, if now I have found favor in your sight, please do not pass your servant by. Please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will bring a piece of bread that you may refresh yourselves. After that you may go on, since you have visited your servants.' And they said, 'So do as you have said.' So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, 'Quickly, prepare 3 measures of fine flour, knead it and make bread cakes.' Abraham also ran to the herd and took a tender and choice calf and gave it to the servants, and he hurried to prepare it. He took curds and milk and the calf which he had prepared and placed it before them, and he was standing by them under the tree as they ate." So the story, if you can begin to visualize it, Abraham out living in the desert in a tent, and it says in verse 1 that he's there in the heat of the day. And if you know anything about the Arabian Middle Eastern deserts, of course we know a lot about deserts, it gets hot here, but it gets hotter there. Sometimes I hear about the temperatures in Iraq, and in that region, it gets even hotter than it is here in July and August and so forth. It can be 120, 125 easily. And so here you have Abraham in the tent in the heat of the day because it's too hot to do anything else. So that's the setting. We have Abraham in the tent, and he looks up, and there appears to him 3 men. These are 3 angelic beings, as we find out, that are synonymous with the presence of the Lord. In fact, it's kind of interchanged that the Lord appeared to him, but it also talks about 3 men coming. 3 angelic beings who are perfect representatives of God. And so they are synonymous with the presence of the Lord. The Lord himself is not actually there, but he's being represented by these 3 men. And so in verse 3, Abraham greets them. Actually, it's interesting. He must have singled one out and says, "My Lord." Now, in saying that, he's not saying that this is God who is visiting him, because "my Lord" is just a proper greeting at that time. And so that's how you would address someone, not necessarily to acknowledge this is an angel or this is a representative of God. Verses 4 and 5 are kind of interesting because he initially offers some water to wash their feet and a piece of bread, just a light snack, and then they can be on their way. However, after they agree to it, he really brings out a very lavish feast for them. So instead of just a piece of bread, Sarah is sent with the task of making several loaves of bread. That's going to take a little bit of time. Goes out and gets a choice calf, repairs it. That's also going to take a little bit of time. And so before it's all done, this light snack has become a lavish feast that probably took quite a bit of time to prepare. And so then the meal is prepared. It is set before them. And it says that Abraham stands there by them as they eat the meal. And then that's when things get kind of interesting over dinner. Verses 9 to 15. "Then they said to him, 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' And he said, 'There, in the tent.' He said, 'I will surely return to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son.' And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. Sarah was past childbearing. Sarah laughed to herself, saying, 'After I have become old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' And the Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Shall I indeed bear a child when I am old? Is anything too difficult for the Lord? At the appointed time I will return to you, at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son.' Sarah denied it, however, saying, 'I did not laugh,' for she was afraid. And he said, 'No, you did laugh.'" Things get very interesting as Abraham stands listening, watching these men as they eat. And the question is raised by at least one of these angelic beings: "Where is Sarah, your wife?" Pause and think about that just for a moment. Strangers have appeared, and one of the strangers is calling out to Abraham's wife by name. you'll recall in the previous chapter, just a short while before that, God had changed both Abraham and Sarah's name. So here's information a mere mortal would not be privy to. And so if Abraham had any doubts about who he was talking to, they should have begun to clear up at that particular point. Verse 10 is very, very definite in what they are saying. These angelic beings are going to plan a return visit a year from now, and at that time, Sarah will then have a son. That's information that can very easily be verified. It's going to be true or not. We will come back at a certain time, 1 year later. Sarah will have a son at that time. That will either be true or not. And so they really have laid it all on the line. And again, only angelic beings, only the work of God would be that way. That's how divine activity works. Fast forward and think about the activities of Jesus as he walked the earth. When Jesus would heal someone, it was verifiable, it was noticeable, it happened instantaneously on the spot. And so when God is at work, it's easy to verify whether it's true or not. That's one of the beefs, I guess, I have with so-called faith healers, just to take a side trip for just a little bit. Many times, those that allegedly have such a gift will say, well, an inner healing has taken place, or a gradual healing has taken place, not easily observable. Again, I believe that there's a consistent pattern with the work of God. When God does something, and when it's done either by God directly or through His Son, Jesus Christ, it is verifiable. You can easily say this happened or this took place or not. And that is certainly a sign of the divine. And so it is with Abraham and Sarah and the message they've just been delivered. These angels will be back in a year. Sarah will have a son. You can check us out. That's either going to be true or it will not. Now, one of the things I think about is God had previously revealed to Abraham the fact that he would have a son through Sarah. But, you know, thus far that was not revealed directly to Sarah, at least so that we understand. This is the very first time that Sarah is getting this information. She is now being told directly by angels she's going to have a son in a particular amount of time. And so as I try to fill in the blanks here between Abraham being told that he would have a son by Sarah, and in Abraham relaying that information to Sarah, I think he's left with the choice to tell her about it and how she's handling that information. You can just kind of imagine the dynamic going on there and the doubts perhaps that Sarah has. In fact, that may be why we have the incident that we're reading about here, because this is just too much for Sarah to take in. She's 90 years old and now she's going to have a child? And an angel told you that, Abraham? You know, that's probably a little hard for her to digest. Maybe Abraham's a little off his rocker, been out in the sun too long. And so maybe she's having difficulty with it. Again, it's all speculation, but I wonder about it. And so Abraham, no doubt, is believing. It says in the previous chapter, he laughed when he heard that news, and it was kind of a delightful laugh. God is going to favor me with a child in my old age. Now we come to this part where Sarah hears the word, and she laughs, but apparently her laugh is the laugh of doubt. And in fact, it seems like she's a bit reprimanded. In fact, we're kind of left hanging here because the angel simply talks about the fact that he knows Sarah's thoughts. She did not laugh out loud. She laughed to herself, it says. And the angel has picked up on that. Why did Sarah laugh? There was nothing to be observed, nothing to be heard. Again, proof that this is an angelic being. And so he wants to know. She's afraid because I think the truth is beginning to dawn on to her. And she denies it. I didn't laugh. The angel said, no, you did. You did laugh. And so that's kind of where things are left. But again, I think about this difference in belief between Abraham and Sarah. Abraham believed when a messenger told him, in fact, I think God himself had told him, that he would have a son by Sarah. And again, I think she must have had difficulty buying into this whole thing. And there's that probably that tension in the family because Abraham knows God has said something. Sarah's not so sure about it. And so there's kind of a spiritual rift perhaps that took place. And as I think about that, again, I'm wildly speculating that may not have been the case, but it seems it's possible. And I think that that is typical of how it is sometimes in marriages. Husbands and wives sometimes are not really on the same plane spiritually. And more often than not, I know I'm really stepping out here saying that. Usually it's the other way around between Abraham and Sarah. I think many times it's the wives that are spiritually in tune. And men, sometimes as husbands, we're not quite as in tune. It takes a little bit to bring us along. So the tables often are turned. But regardless of the situation, I think there was a spiritual disparity with them that sometimes enters into our marriages as well. But again, the angel, in the midst of all of this, as Sarah laughs, as she's having difficulty absorbing this truth, verse 14 is a very, very important verse, a highlight verse. If you don't have it highlighted, I encourage you to do so. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? It's a rhetorical question, by the way. Nothing is impossible for the Lord. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? Sarah, in case you're having trouble believing that at the age of 90 you can have a child, consider who made the promise and the statement. It is the God who can do anything. The God who specializes in the impossible. The El Shaddai, God Almighty, as we talked about last week. And what a tremendous, tremendous truth. I've kind of, for the last couple weeks, just been trying to drink this in a little bit more because it's raised my awareness as I've thought about God. God Almighty who does the impossible. And so it is. God is well able to do the things that we consider to be impossible. And when I think of this particular instance, a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman about to have a child, to me that's top of the list of impossible. If God can do that, what else can God do? The impossible situations we face are far less impossible compared to this. That's the benchmark for me. I come back to this and I think of other things that I label impossible. And I do that a lot. In my own mind, there are certain things that I say, well, this just can't happen. This can't take place. And so I put the restrictions on God in saying He can't do such and such. But yet I think the restrictions are maybe coming up a little bit more as I think of this story. If God can do this, what else can God do? God is the God of the impossible. And if you want to get down to specifics, can God provide you a job in this kind of economy? Well, why not? Can God make ends meet on a limited budget? Why not? God's the God of the impossible. Can God direct a church to have a major impact on the community and the world? Why not? He's the God of the impossible. Again, those are things far more believable than a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman having a child. So again, come back to that as the benchmark. God can do that. What else can God do? So again, maybe if you hear nothing else, hear the first part of verse 14. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? So far, it doesn't appear there is. Because He is the God of all possibilities. Sarah was slow believing, but apparently this was her moment when she realized she was in the presence of God's angels and she became fearful, but she came to believe. And in fact, this much we know for certain. Hebrews 11, verse 11 says concerning Sarah, by faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered Him faithful who had promised. Whether this was the exact moment she believed or not, we don't know. But Hebrews tells us very clearly, the hall of fame of the faithful, in verse 11, that she considered Him faithful to what He had promised. So she came to have that belief. Even though it was absurd to think at her age she could have a child, somehow she came to believe in the God of all possibilities. And of course we know the same with Abraham. Without becoming weak in faith, Abraham contemplated his own body, now as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, and the deadness of Sarah's womb, yet with respect to the promise of God, he did not waver in unbelief, but grew strong in faith, and giving glory to God, and being fully assured that what God had promised, he was able to perform. Therefore, it was credited to him as righteousness. Romans chapter 4, verses 19 to 22. So we know that was the outcome with Sarah and with Abraham. They faced the greatest of all impossibilities, and they said, if God promised it, the God of all possibilities, He is well able to do it. And so they grew in their faith. They stood strong in their faith. And of course, God accomplished exactly what He wanted to accomplish through them. Now, there are two questions for me that come out of the text that we've just looked at here in Genesis chapter 18 that I think are very challenging. First of all, what is my plan to be ready for God's tests through His angels. To go back to the early part of the story. If we are assured that we entertain angels unaware, even as Abraham entertained angels in this particular story, what are we doing to be ready to prepare for the test that God brings to us through His hidden messengers that He sends to us? I want to tell you a little story about a pastor I know from another culture. And I tell you that because in their culture things were done a little bit differently. And I almost hesitate to tell you this because I'm afraid you'll do it. But the church set up a test for their pastor. And as I understand it, here's how it went. Someone in the church called him up one afternoon or evening, and they had asked him and his wife if they would prepare a meal immediately to take to a member in the church who immediately had a need. And so the situation was one of their members was in a situation where they were sick or something, I don't know. But anyway, that was the test. They asked him on the moment if they would prepare a meal and take it to that particular family. It was no doubt a very inconvenient time. And again, I hate to tell you this story because you may decide to do this and call me up about 6 o'clock tonight and say, could you still bring a meal or whatever? But anyway, he passed the test with flying colors because that's all it was. They prepared a meal. They took it to that particular home. But the congregation, I guess, early on wanted to know if this guy was walking the walk as well as talking the talk. And I think that's interesting. I don't think we do that in our English-American culture. But in this particular culture, it was a common thing to do. And again, you can see some wisdom in that. You find out if the guy is really real or not. And so that was a test they had prepared for him as their pastor. Again, God prepares tests for us in a variety of ways. And He will send us His messengers at the least convenient time for us. And that seems to be the way it works. He wants to catch us off guard, find out just how real our faith is and whether we're willing to respond to that or not. I guess it's a good idea for us to think in advance that God will do that if He's not already done so. He will test us through His angels to find out how valid our faith really is, how we're going to respond. So we need to think in advance of how we're going to deal with that situation. There is a second question out of this text that I really appreciate, and that is, what one area have I labeled impossible that God considers absolutely doable? Again, of course, it goes back to verse 14. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? I shared with you some of my thinking. There are times when I put the lid on it and I say, this can't happen, this can't be done, and I restrict God. So let me get specific with you for a moment and ask you to consider, what is one area that I have labeled impossible that God considers to be absolutely doable? Maybe the one great opportunity He has put in your path and you've already closed it out, but God say, wait a minute, that's the one thing I want to do. That's one thing I want to accomplish in your life right now. Someone has suggested to do a study of the Bible researching this particular phrase, but God. And that is something good to do. Here are a few examples you will find if you do a topical search. But God remembered. But God said. But God will redeem. But God is the strength of my heart. But God appointed. But God knows your heart. But God raised Him from the dead. But God demonstrates His love toward us. But God has chosen. But God was causing the growth. But God has called us. But God has granted. But God had mercy. Those are some power-packed statements, aren't they? When all the evidence is in, and we say this is the way it is, but God does and says and chooses. And that's the way it is. We reach a verdict, but God says, here's what I can do. Here's what I want to do. I want you to think on those things. I want you to think again on verse 14. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? And I want to give us a very specific way to walk a challenge here this morning. Again, thinking about one area that I've labeled impossible, that God says, oh no, it isn't. This is the one thing I really want to do in your life. And so I need a couple helpers right now because I've got some papers I want you to have and hopefully fill out. So if I can have a couple helpers here, maybe I should keep one so I can read what it's going to say. All right. This slip of paper says, I am today turning blank over to the God of all possibilities. There's a nice big blank on there for you to fill in. So I want you to think about that one area that you are labeling impossible, that you've already put the lid on and said, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's possible. I want you to think about that. That one thing. And I am today turning blank over to the God of all possibilities. In case you forget that promise in Genesis 18, verse 14, I've given you the reference there. Think about that. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? Sure, it's too difficult for us. And in our thinking, we may have made it such. But think about that truth. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? So therefore, that one thing I am today turning over to the God of all possibilities. I'd like to encourage you to even pause and pray about it for a little bit, and maybe immediately it comes to mind. Right away, there's a word or a phrase, there's a situation that comes to mind. What I want you to do is think about that. If something indeed comes to mind, and maybe nothing does, maybe there's nothing, you know, maybe I've been unfair in what I've said, maybe there's nothing that you've labeled as impossible, but I think there is the possibility that there is. If something comes to mind, write it down. And I want to give you an opportunity in a moment here. We're going to sing our closing song in just a bit. I want to give you the opportunity to bring that paper up and place it on this communion table as a symbol of surrendering that one thing to the God of all possibilities. I will encourage you to come and place it here, and we'll do one more thing with it. And that is, I will collect those, and I will bring those to our prayer group on Wednesday night. And by the way, you do not have to put your name on this. In fact, you're encouraged not to, but if you specifically want to, that's fine. But we don't need to know a name to pray for the situation, because this may be something that's way too uncomfortable for you to make others aware of. So whatever you choose to do, though, to bring that up here, place it on this table, we will collect those, we will pray for those this Wednesday night, and agree together with the God of all possibilities that He can do indeed that one thing that you may be thinking is impossible. So that's my challenge to you this morning. And again, I encourage you to pray about it for a moment. Think about it. Write something down if you're so led. And at this particular point, I'd like to invite the worship team to come up. And we will ask you to stand as we sing. And again, if you feel led to come up and surrender that to the Lord on this table, please do so.